accession number 27730, reel 4.
Mr. Bob Lunn, reel 4. Now, we're talking about when you got to Royal Army Service Corps, 29th Armoured Brigade Royal Army Service Corps Detachment, yes, at Northampton in 1940. Now, what was life like there? Can you tell us a bit, you know, because you were there quite a while, weren't you?
Yes, well, what we did a lot of moving about. Because being the RASC, we had to move other BODs around. You know, I had to go over to a infantry, pick them up, and take them over to, wherever they want to go and do some practicing on shooting or what have you. Having got the job as chauffeur to the Major Nicholson, who was our CO, with this Humber Snipe, which, well, I suppose I adored, really, which is a stupid word to use for a car. But Major Nicholson, he was a very nice officer, but he used to smoke all my cigarettes. And I used to have to get cigarettes for him and for me and put them in the glove box. And he used to say, driver, got any cigarettes over there? Yes, sir. Well, I'll have a packet. By the time he'd finished all his, he'd start on mine. But I didn't mind because he was a good officer.
And where would you drive him? What actual duties would you do? You know,
I'd pick him up in the morning and he'd say, or I'd go to his office, the office, and say, where are we today, sir? And he'd say, I should want you at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock, whatever, after he'd seen to the various duties that he had to see to with his officers and complaints and what have you. He'd say, I want you to run me down to the town, or I want you to run me over to some other company. We're going out tonight on convoy. You best get a few hours sleep in, and because you will be at the front of the column. And we're doing a night practice. I said, oh, that's jolly. Because you could speak the kind of man you could speak to. I mean, if I said that to the other officers I met in my lifetime, I'd probably been shot at dawn. But we'd go round Northamptonshire, and it was all done by map references, because all the road signs had been taken down. If you got lost and you asked somebody where you were, they wouldn't tell you. You had to go and find yourself, get one of your ordnance maps out and look it up and see where you were there. And we go Northampton up to, say, I haven't got my map with me, so I can't tell you. Northampton up to go down south, so probably down to Cardington, where the airship bases were. That was a very large airfield. We'd pick up a load of troops, and they would be sitting there with their haversacks and what have you. And we would take them round the countryside, and we would have orders to stop here, there and everywhere.
So you'd go with the lorries, with the snipe, and the major?
Yes, we were up the front. We were the first... we were with the... There was the major in his car, our car, the water carrier, all the DRs. There'd probably be half a dozen DRs on their motorbikes. And... they would follow us, and the DRs would break off and go off. They would have their maps and they would go up to where there'd be, say, a crossroad, or they would know where they were going, same as I would eventually. And the trouble we found was that the drivers of, say, 30 lorries probably been working all day, and then they were out on night driving. And when you stopped, the DRs would go along and make sure that the drivers were awake, moving off. The sergeant major would be on his bike. He'd come down and say, "You're ready to move off." Well, I was a corporal then. Corporal, you Lance Corporal. "You're ready to move off, Corporal?" "Yes. Yes, sir." "Right. I'll get make sure that all the drivers are awake. And they go down the column on their motorbikes, make sure that..." And by the time they got back to us to say, "Okay, move on," we'd move, and you'd probably get the first 10 vehicles come with you. The 11th driver had gone to sleep. And so the DRs would stop us. And this would be how it would happen practically all night. They'd be stopping and starting, because the next driver had gone to sleep, because he was so tired, time they moved off. And the idea of army moving off was that if you moved, that was the first vehicle, the next vehicle, when you moved, that moved as well. But time it got to the third one, he's gone to sleep. The army impression was that when the front moved, the rear was moving. But it didn't work out like that. It just didn't. It couldn't work it out like that. All the time I was with the army and driving from the army, it never worked out. The first and probably up to the 10th vehicle would move off in together. The 11th would be, might be awake, and he would move off, but he would be that momentary a gap between. But anyway, we survived.
Was there any rules about driving at night? I mean, you weren't using headlights, I presume, were you?
No, we didn't have headlights. Because it made it very difficult. All the headlights had hoods on, the same as the civilians did, that were driving, what had petrol to drive around with. They all had hoods. And all you could see was about, from here to that cabinet.
So about 7 or 8 feet there.
About 7 or 8 feet, and that was it. And they didn't fly along. I mean, if I was out on my own with the major, I'd probably go along at 50 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour. But if it was a convoy, you'd go out and probably build it up to about 40 miles an hour. But the idea, the army said, well, if the front one was doing 40 miles an hour, the 30th would be good doing the same speed, because you move as a column. But it never worked out. It just didn't work out. Couldn't work out. Even if you tried it today, you'd always have the last one would be waiting to see where the others were going. Then he'd move. And the time that he caught up, he would probably be half a mile behind. Anyway, we survived, and we got our convoys out and around.
Was most of the driving at night in convoys, or would you go out?
No, it was in convoys.
But it was at night you did
at
most.
Night, all night. Night convoys. And we used to drive. I went to sleep. I'm not saying that I was an angel, but I mean, I'd been driving, sitting at the front, waiting for the orders. Right, to a driver, move out. Move on. And I'd probably have Major Nicholson, one or two other officers in the car, and There was one particular convoy where we were driving, night driving, and I went in the ditch. But I came out the ditch, because going in the ditch, it woke me up. And coming out the ditch, I was back on column. But the sergeant major came up. All the officers were asleep in the back. I mean, poor old Joe up the front, he was driving, he had to be awake. But the sergeant major came alongside on his motorbike and he said, "That was close on, wasn't it?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, stay awake now." But it did wake me up. Anyway, we came back to Northampton and we went to our various companies and dropped the troops. And I came back to Northampton with the convoy and they went to bed. Next morning, we were probably up again to go somewhere else. I was been made up to back to Lance Corporal, and sorry about that.
It's all right.
And then, as I say, my father died. I was with them for 18 months with the...
At Northampton?
No, we moved from Northampton, we went up to... we did a lot of work up in Yorkshire, went to Penistone, did a lot of exercises. We went to... One lot of exercises was in Delamere Forest, near Chester.
Now, what would the exercises be like? What would you do in doing exercises?
Throwing grenades around and...
What you would, is it?
Yeah, they would give me a... See how I was good on throwing a grenade. What I was like with a Piet gun. Piet gun was personal... It was P-I-A-T.
And what was it
personal
like?
Personal something... anti-tank gun.
Now tell us about the Piet. What was that like?
Well, it was a gun with a shell. It wasn't a cartridge. And it was for hitting tank tracks. We all had to do it. All the drivers had to do it. Because you never knew when you were likely to be called on to take a tank out, an enemy tank out. And we all had to learn these things, irrespective of whether you used them at all or not. You know.
Now, what were they like to fire? How did it work?
There'd be two of you. One would be passing the shell to you. You'd be on your stomach. And it was about 3 foot long. And the barrel would be 6 inches diameter. And you put the shell down the front and you'd click it on and then just simply fire it once you got your aimed it for. What we were aiming at was pieces of corrugated steel. And they were, because I couldn't put any tanks up because we wanted as many tanks as possible. And we were firing at this corrugated steel. Most of us were pretty good. Most of the drivers, they thought it was a bit of a giggle and they just showed the officers that they could do it as well as what the infantry could. But we all had to do these things as much as what the infantry did. The only thing between the drivers and the infantry was that we didn't have to go charging across the fields.
What about the hand grenade training you mentioned? What about
hand grenades? With the British hand grenade, you had about that was the hand grenade. It have a clip and a pin. You could take the pin out hold the clip down. But as soon as you took that your thumb away, that clip went up and you were ready to fire. So you didn't release that clip and you didn't take the pin out. But what we were trained to do was to... take the pin out, hold it, and they say, throw. And you threw it. And you threw it as far as you possibly could. But it wasn't too bad. I mean...
Did you do any other weapons training?
Yes, Bren gun. We had the Lewis gun. Lewis gun I didn't like because it was always jamming, because it was this is Provost. Can you switch it off?
Think about the Lewis gun.
The Lewis gun, I didn't like the Lewis gun. It was a cylinder top. I can't remember the amount of cartridges that was in the cylinder. I suppose it'd be about 50, 60. And that you... It was the slightest bit of dirt on a cartridge in the drum would stop your gun. Where you didn't get that with the Bren gun. But what I found was that if you were loading your Lewis gun in training, I used to have a piece of rag and I used to wipe every cartridge before I put it into the drum. Or it was, I think, an infantry soldier told me how to do it. And I always got good marks with me Lewis. Then they put me on Bren gun. Though I was still the chauffeur to the major, I still had to do the various other things that the other drivers had to do.
Now, what did you think of the Bren gun?
The Bren gun, I thought, was a marvellous marvellous gun. It was more accurate than the Lewis, I think. And it was also easier to carry. You had, on your equipment, you had long cartridge carriers. I suppose you had two in each, cartridge holders in each
pouch.
Can't think of the word. Pouches. But and also you get one in the gun, so you'd have five drums of cartridges. You could use the Bren gun flat on the ground. Or you can, it was so, it was light as compared to the Lewis. You couldn't, well, I never did, put the Lewis to your shoulder and fire like a rifle. But you could with the Bren gun. You could also hold it as a machine gun and spray.
From the hip?
From the hip. And I think all the, if there was any other soldiers here, they would say that they favoured the Bren gun rather than the Lewis. And yet the Lewis was used a lot in the Royal Air Force, on the old planes, not the modern planes. But I can't remember that the Bren gun was ever used. Because when... the 7th Armoured Div got really formed together. We had our own squadron of planes, which belonged to the Americans. Americans was with us then.
Now, you were doing these exercises. This is still much earlier than that. Now, these are infantry exercises that you were doing as RAM, Royal Army Service.
We were RASC.
And you were doing, but you were still doing infantry
yes.
exercises.
Oh, yes, we were.
Now, what type of infantry exercises were they, as opposed to training?
We went to the, for instance, we went to Penistone in Yorkshire.
Now, what did you do there?
That was a range, a very large rifle range. And everybody went there. Anybody that was there, anybody in the army went to Penistone Rifle Range. And when I was up there in 42, there was a bit of a mad major up there. And he used to stand on the parapets and fire his rifle or his machine gun across the top of the ranges to make the soldiers keep their heads down. And the soldiers and the NCOs said he was complete barmy. And he got reported. And I reported my end to my major, and I said, well, he shouldn't have a crown. He should be taken away and put in a madhouse. So he said, well, why? What's wrong with him? I said, well, you wait until it comes to your turn. I hope he does to you what he did to the soldiers, up to the NCOs. And he said, well, tell me what he does, and then I might have something to go on. I said, well, he stands on the parapet whilst you're firing. If you look up, he'd fire at you with a machine gun. So he said, oh, does he? So anyway, the next thing we knew, he'd been put on a draft and he was sent abroad. They got rid of him that way. And he was it. Can't remember his name. Don't want to know his name. But anyway, that's what he did. We used to go to take the troops up to Penistone quite a lot. Various companies, which I can't remember, didn't want to remember. Well, then we moved from Northampton and we went out to Cambridgeshire.
From where?
Cambridgeshire, just outside Cambridge. I can't remember that it was between St. Neots and Cambridge. That's all I can tell you. But it was opposite a very large airfield, which was the Americans used with their flying fortresses. Because they used to make a heck of a noise.
So this is before your father had died?
Yes, yeah. just before my father had died.
Now, what was this new camp like?
Well, it wasn't so much the camp as just being in a row of lorries in lanes. A lorry was quite comfortable to sleep on because we had radiator muffs as our bedding and blankets. We had three blankets. Because you were always on call. It was quite comfortable sleeping in the snipe. We used to get in the back. The officers would go into an inn somewhere. And the cars would be left outside and the drivers used to get in the back and go to sleep. It was a wonderful army, you know. So anyway.
Now, what were you doing when you moved there, or was it just the same?
It was exactly the same. It was all exercises. There was one particular exercise where they called in all the officers to meet the Americans. And we went up to Newmarket, and we went up onto the racing tracks. Well, of course, there was no racing held then, and we went up onto the gallops, where the gallops took place now. And the Americans were there with their squadron of planes. I was called into the called in front of the major, and he said, "You've got to go to Newmarket. and you will be picking up a celebrity. He said, I can't tell you at the time who you'll be with, but he said, make sure the car is perfectly clean. By then they'd painted my car into camouflage, which was a shame really. But anyway, when I got to this place on the map, there was all lovely cars there, beautiful cars. Churchill was there. I carried the Prime Minister of Australia. Can't think of his name now. Certainly wasn't Howard, who got in back in again. There was Montgomery was there. Eisenhower was there. General Clark was there for the Americans, because he was the leader of the group that went into North Africa. General Clark, quite a nice looking fella. And they had an inspection of all the planes and the tanks and everything that was lined up to be inspected, and they drove them in the car convoys, so there was enough room for us to go through. And there was it was quite a well, I really enjoyed that, because and I think all the other drivers that was on that column.
Well, was there an actual conference happening there, or was
yes, there was they had a conference afterwards. But after the conference, we took them back to Newmarket Station, where a train was standing by.